Welcome to the Crafting Character Podcast. Steve Carter here, and in association with my good friends at Preaching Today and Food for the Hungry, I bring you a podcast that hopefully helps you get better at the craft of preaching and teaching and communicating God's word while always hoping and ensuring our character leads the way. Well, today I'm excited because we have a return guest. We don't do this very often, but every once in a while, you just know that you need to bring someone back. And I'm excited because Pastor Jay Kim, many of you wrote me, direct messaged me about our last conversation. You know that he is a pastor at Westgate Church that is in the Northern California, like San Jose, Los Gatos area. And he's also an amazing, incredible author, Analog Church, Analog Christian, and just immensely, immensely important books. But I will tell you this, he and I met at a dude ranch in Colorado, and we didn't even know each other. I mean, we knew of each other. We didn't know each other. And I'll just tell you, I sat down, and in a matter of moments, we were talking about our kids, and we were talking about Sabbath, and we were talking about just leadership and preaching. And it's just one of those moments where you know this isn't just a peer. This isn't just another person who's doing a similar thing. But this guy just felt like a brother. And he was like one of those guys that if I lived in the same town, I know that we'd hang out a ton. And so I'm excited to tell you because to have Jay back on because he has another book coming out actually next Tuesday, April 16th, called Listen, Listen, Speak, Hearing God and Being Heard in a Noisy World. And I got to read it. I love it. I can't wait to talk about it. So without further ado, the one, the only, Jay Kim.
Oh my gosh, man. That was, yeah. I want you to travel around with me, Steve, and just be my hype man.
Bro,
you made me sound so much cooler than I actually am.
No, man, let me. Let me. I will be that guy.
Dude.
Here's the thing.
You fun are, to be on with you, man.
You are thoughtful. You are accessible. Dude, you are deep. But, dude, you're just, like, present. And I think it's one of the great gifts you offer. And so, yeah, man, thanks for joining us. Let me dive in and ask you, listen, listen, speak. I love the title. Talk about why this book, why now in 2024?
Yeah. The book really is me sort of chronicling my own journey through frustration and anxiety and a lack of a seeming sort of inability to hear God. I think most people can relate to this. We live in a just a noisy world. And like most people, I've just found myself over the course of many years now feeling like I'm drowning in the noise. And, you know, as a Christian professional, like I'm like paid to hear the voice of God and communicate it to people. But in especially in recent years, I just so often I find myself sitting down to listen, but hearing nothing but the chaos and the cacophony. And I felt like, man, there's got to be a way through this that isn't just contingent on the sort of like mountaintop moments, you know, like when you and I met, man, I heard the voice of God, but we were literally on a mountain, you know, in Colorado at elevation. And we were at this beautiful dude ranch that like everything about our surrounding was designed to quiet the noise. And it was beautiful and it was effective. But the reality is I don't live most of my life in that environment. You know, like I came down from that mountain, you and I both, and the dozens of other guys that were up there. We all came down from that mountain after 3 days. Like we, you know, it's not like we live up there. And we all went off to different parts of the country to noise, you know, to chaos. I came home to chaos. But I really felt like, man, there's got to be a way. It's not just the environment. It's not just that I was in this beautiful place. It's that I proactively must have tapped into something that allowed me to hear the voice of God with more clarity. So that's why I wrote the book. I went on a journey for a number of years trying to figure out what are those things that I can bring back down from the mountain that have resonance, that I can tap into every day and you know, hear God effectively. And then in turn, to speak effectively into the chaos, you know, in such a way that maybe what God has to say through me might cut through that noise. So yeah, that's where the book came from.
You live in Northern California. You live in like Silicon Valley. I mean, we've talked about, you've had some incredible execs and leaders who are doing and taking incredible ground technologically. You know, there's so much like just buzzing around your kind of environment. And I'm curious, you know, because I do think that most of us want to hear God, yeah. You know, and I know that environment does matter. Like you mentioned, going to this mountain, you know, being in a nice office or sitting at a familiar spot. What have you learned though, about being able to access, really the whispers of God, the promptings of the Spirit, because again, you are so thoughtful and you write in a way that it's so shaping and forming, not just our mind, but our understanding of the spiritual life. And in the depth of what you were talking about, hearing God, it was so weighty, but it was also so accessible. What were some of those kind of surprise learnings for you where you were able to go, man, this was easier than I thought, kind of translating the mountain to my current context? And what was surprisingly more difficult than you might have first perceived?
Yeah, man, that's a wonderful question. You know, one of the things that stands out to me is I have become so, in a noisy world, I have become so accustomed to volume. So, you know, the sort of the natural inclination amid noise is to turn up the volume. So when we are surrounded by noise, if we want to hear something, what we naturally do is, okay, everything's noisy, but I want to hear this. I want to hear this voice or this person, or I'm listening to this podcast, whatever it might be. And what we do is, okay, just crank that volume so that I can hear this one thing above all the other things. I think one of the things I've learned or am continuing to learn in recent years is that volume is not really what I'm after. What I'm after is clarity. So even now on this call, you know, I'm wearing my AirPods, and with the, you know, the newer AirPods, right, there's the noise canceling option. It's pretty funny when I go to the gym to go, you know, on a run or whatever, I'll listen. Sometimes I'll listen to you, you know, and your teachings and stuff. And the gym is so noisy, at least the gym I go to. And I don't usually use my noise canceling on my AirPods. I like this sort of transparency here. But at the gym, I kind of have to do the noise canceling. But I remember the first few times I went to the gym and used my AirPods, because I never use it, I had forgotten that I had noise canceling on these AirPods. Yeah. So what I was doing initially was just cranking the volume, and I could hear, but it was just chaos in my head. Like, 'cause I can hear all of the ambient sound of the gym, and then I could hear sort of what I was listening to, but I was hearing it amid all the other noise, and it was just like blaring, you know, in my head. And then I realized, you know, two or three times after going to the gym and doing this, it's like, wait a minute. I paid like a lot of money for these AirPods. They have noise cancellation. I totally forgot. And I remember the first time I did the noise cancellation, like the volume was so high that when the noise got canceled, I couldn't listen to it at the volume that I had set it to. And I remember cranking that volume really down, like way low, because now there was clarity.
Yeah.
And for me, I've come to realize, like, man, that's the key, is we can't, the most important voices in our lives, whether it's the voice of God or just the voice of meaningful relationships, the key is not to crank the volume up on those relationships and on the voice of God as much as possible so that it sort of sits above the fray of all the other noise. It's actually to figure out ways to cancel out the other noise and to bring the volume to a meaningful level in such a way that there's real clarity. And that happens a number of ways. There's pragmatic ways in which that happens. But that's been a really, not easy, but an accessible way to figure out how to hear God well, is not to crank him up above all the noise, but to intentionally create noise-canceled spaces in my life. That's been really accessible for me. And then everything you asked, you know, what's been hard, I would say, like, everything else, functionally, pragmatically,
yeah,
that's the challenge. Like, how do you actually cancel the noise? You know,
yeah. One of the interesting pieces I started to realize reading through it was, you know, I had a conversation with someone who was a recovering addict of opioids. And I was like sitting with him and just kind of hearing a little bit about it. And it kind of shifted to, hey, talk about what like actually led you to use opioids. And he said, I didn't want to, you know, I did. And then for the first time ever, all of the voices in my head were gone. Like the noise. And I didn't know how to do that on my own. And this thing allowed it to happen. And I just remembered like sitting there listening and then reading your book going, gosh, like, I think there are times even in my stress or in my kind of disintegration, that internal noise gets so loud. And that's what I try and do. I'm like, just go to God and let's like put that to 11, you know, just like, God, get louder. Mm. But I sometimes don't even know how to kind of turn down some of the internal noise, not even what's around me.
Yeah.
It's just even my own stuff. Talk about that for you. With all that you're leading and all that you're carrying, father, husband, church, podcast, books. I mean, you got staff, congregation, neighbor, you know, you got so much. How do you just like find ways to cancel that internal like J. Kim pressure, that internal kind of, so that you can hear God and find that clarity?
Yeah. I, you know, going back to our relationship, Steve, I remember with so much clarity, you know, that when we met, it was around a round table at dinner, you know, and we just happened to sit next to each other. And I think we've told the story briefly before on your podcast, but that conversation, that first conversation, had almost nothing to do with our work, you know, and the stuff we're making or creating or the churches we're leading or serving or whatever. It was like all about our kids. And it was all about how God had spoken to us in such beautiful, profound ways through our children. And, you know, I think one of the reasons why that was such a beautiful way to start a relationship was because it was such a human way to start a relationship. And the environment we were in, you and I, the guy leading it, dear mutual friend of ours, he's like right up front about saying like, hey, this is not a time for you to walk around with your ego and just, you know, like just hand your CV out of all the things you've done. It's really a time for us to be human, you know, to be brothers and to relate to one another as, you know, sons of a God who loves us and binds us together as family. And I remember doing that. And the simplicity of it was so profound. And I remember it was like, you know, you're talking about your friend who was an opioid addict It's an interesting thing, I think, with addiction. You know more about this than I do, but what I have heard, and I think this is probably overly simplistic, but it is helpful. What I've heard is like, man, with any sort of addiction, trying to no longer be addicted to the thing is ineffective. You've got to recalibrate your body toward a new addiction, you know, like you need to essentially taste and see how good the other thing is. And then you just like your appetites change, you know? Yeah. And for me, I think that's what it's come down to. Like I've had to reckon with the fact that like, because of the sort of circumstances and situations of life in the modern Western world, I am addicted to noise, and I'm addicted to the noise in my own head. You know, like one of my great addictions that I've had to reckon with is an addiction to email, which is all connected. It's deeply connected to, you know, father wounds and insecurity. And every time I have the little blue dot on my phone that tells me I have a new email, it's like a hit of adrenaline telling me you matter and someone needs you and you're important and you've got to get back to them on all those sorts of things. And I've had to, you know, like that kind of noise is just constant. And I've had to get to a place, and I'm still working on this every day, where my appetite needs to change. That the thing I desire most is, you know, I've got to reacclimate my desires and my appetite so that the thing I long for most is not the sort of, you know, fake affirmation of importance or significance that comes from the ping on the email or the text message or the invitation to go do X, Y, and Z. But I need a deeper, greater addiction to the reality that at all times, the presence of a God who loves me as his son is accessible and available. And really, for me, what that's come down to is just, and I want to be careful here not to be prescriptive. This is just mostly descriptive. It's what works for me. It's just these simple practices that have, I would truly say, honestly, have saved my life. So things like breath prayers that I pray throughout the day, the Lord's Prayer, and mapping the Lord's Prayer onto my own sort of personal life every single day. So I pray the Lord's Prayer for my children every day. You know, I did it this morning after I dropped them off at school. You know, God, your kingdom come and your will be done in Harper's life today, whatever that will is. Give her the daily bread she needs, you know, and your kingdom come, your will be done in Simon's life today. And, you know, and so those types of practices, the prayer of examine is something we practice as a family with our kids every single evening. So those moments that acclimate my emotional, spiritual, mental taste buds to the presence of God, where slowly over time, I desire the noise less and less and less, and desire the simplicity of God's loving voice more and more. Whatever those practices are for people, I think that's the way forward.
That's so good. And I think what's so beautiful is, you know, again, this, I think that this book would be an amazing teaching series, because I feel like you can really, really hone in, you know, obviously the listen, speak, you know, that is just brilliant in itself. Two ears, one mouth, you know, there's so much that you talk about there, but the sense of hearing God. And I think people in our congregations, they want to be able to, they just don't know how to understand how to turn on that noise canceling ability and be able to like recognize they're in the presence of God. But I think also people want to speak in a way at which they're bringing order to the chaos, you know, that's like light to the darkness. They're speaking in a way that actually is filled with grace and peace. You talk about this, about being heard. Break that down, because I think that's, you know, the next door app, you have a lot of people who want to be heard, you know. You know, you go on social media, a lot of people want to be heard. You go on talk radio, a lot of people want to be heard. You're talking about a different kind of way of speaking. Talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think in a noisy world, again, our default posture is to just try to scream and shout above the noise, you know, and I understand that posture. I've spent much of my life sort of doing the same, you know, but, you know, the question I began asking is like, man, this is exhausting. It feels really ineffective. So there's gotta be another way. So then I started asking the question, who are the people that hold my attention? Like, what makes me perk up and listen? And I quickly realized it wasn't the voices that scream and shout above or like more loudly than the rest. Like that's not who holds my attention. It's the people who speak in a way that is just so diametrically opposed to the way the chaos and cacophony of culture is sort of inundating our hearts and minds. And so, you know, Neil Postman is like this futurist from the 80s. He wrote, you know, his most famous work, this book called Amusing Ourselves to Death. He was commenting at the time when he wrote the book in the 80s, he was commenting on the television and on like news media. But if you read Amusing Ourselves to Death without knowing when it was written, like you could read it today and you would think Postman was writing today.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like so prescient, so incredible. And he's got this wonderful thing where he's talking about the news and he talks about how until the telegraph was invented, the fastest that news could possibly travel up to that point was the speed of train, which was about 35 miles per hour at the time in the late 19th century. So because of that, he says, news was always local. Because if news could only travel at 35 miles an hour, by the time it got from one city to another, it was no longer news because it had happened 2 days ago, you know? So news really was just, it was local. It was all local news. And because of that, the nature of news at the time was like, it was action-based. It was news that affected you because it was news that was happening in your town, your neighborhood, your city. And it invited you to participate in the story. Like, hey, this has happened. It happened in your neighborhood. You know, Farmer John's farm lit up on fire and it burnt down. So now you've got something to do. You could go take some extra food or some water to Farmer John and help. That was the nature of news. And then Postman talks about how the telegraph changed everything, right? And the first telegraph message actually ever sent by Samuel Morse was a quotation from Deuteronomy, what hath God wrought? You know, which is basically like this, it's like incredibly poignant thing to say, like, what have we done? You know, like, what have we created? And now that news could travel because of the telegraph, eventually over the course of several years, from like Baltimore, Washington, D.C., or Baltimore, Maryland, to London, England, because of a line that was laid across the Atlantic in a matter of hours, now news was not local. And fast forward to today in the world of Twitter or X or whatever, now I open up this phone from my back pocket and I know what's happening in real time on the other side of the planet, which is actually really helpful in some sense, but really harmful in another, because now I think of news, in Postman's words, he would say news now is just entertainment. It's not about me doing anything. It's about me just being more informed and maybe commenting and shouting into the ether. And so I think one of the most important ways that especially followers of Jesus need to think about speaking in a way to be heard is to begin thinking about being good news people, like in a real way, in a pre-telegraph sort of way, like good news right here, right now, in our neighborhood, in our workplace, to the barista at our coffee shop, or the banker at the bank, or whatever it might be, to speak good news in a real way instead of screaming into the digital ether to carry good news in embodied ways in our real neighborhoods, on our real streets, with real people in our midst. And I realized, man, those are the people who have my attention. You know, people who speak good news to me in an embodied way in my real life.
Wow. You know, I remember the moment, even as you described the postman kind of move to the Telegraph, I remember a moment vividly, and it was the Boston Marathon bombing. Where I was watching the news, but it was behind Twitter. And Twitter was like giving reports, police scanners that people were listening to that we were post. And I realized that was the moment for me where I realized, oh my goodness, social media now is the place that people are looking. I didn't use the language that that's entertainment, but I felt like it was behind, but it totally has become that, you know? And I think, gosh, the way – and you do this so well with like Analog Church or Analog Christian. You have a way of having this very formation kind of very big conversation, but like bringing it down to the soil and to the ground and to the neighborhood and to the people and to the streets. And I thought just your kind of turn to make it – really good news oriented in the book was just it was different than where I thought you were going to go as I was reading it, and then it was like, oh, this is like what I need. This is what I need, and this is what I actually can control. This is what I can actually embody. And again, that's where I thought, man, this is such the power and potential, especially going into an election year. Especially like with all that is coming at us, to really shape and form our communities, our churches, to be people who hear God, but people who actually know how to be heard in a noisy world by being people of good news. And I was wondering, have you, with this book, have you seen maybe a teaching series? Are you guys doing anything like that at Westgate, or like a small group curriculum or anything around that?
Yeah, we're going to do sort of a one-night lecture type event for our whole church, and I'll do a special training for our small group leaders, about 200 small group leaders, primarily around the idea of, man, how can we speak to one another in a way where we really speak good news in real ways in a world of such bad news, you know, and chaos and noise. As far as the teaching series goes, actually the book came about as a collection of, it's probably like 50% all sort of brand new thoughts and concepts and ideas, and then 50% sort of conversations, not in one series but over the course of several series, conversations we were having as a church family already, and seeing some through lines there. So in a way, it is sort of an anthology series of several series. So we have given some thought to around the election sort of teaching through some of this book. I mean, to be forthright, I did, and the publisher and I did think, you know, very clearly about that. Man, if what would I want to say going into an election year? What is it that I want to say to our people, like our church?
Yeah.
And it would be this, you know, and that's one of the reasons why we're releasing it when we are, just as the sort of campaign season gets really cranking. And it is designed in a way where my hope is that folks could take these chapters and discuss them and have conversations around them within church communities, for sure.
I'm telling you, friends, like for any of you who are pastoring churches, it's one of the great gifts that Jay just does. So it feels so effortlessly, and I know it's not. You know, he works really hard at it, but you feel how pastoral he is, and you feel as if you feel like you're a part of his congregation reading this book. But it's just because you're like, you feel like you're sitting with the pastor who's guiding you through and helping you think through and think about. And again, just think at a higher level and actually think, man, how does this actually work to be embodied in my actual real life. And so I think it's amazing. And I've been trying to think through kind of like, man, what would be a great resource for like our people? And this book, I think, is one of those that I think would just be fantastic. Jay, I often ask writers this, you know, the process to write a book, you know, 2 years, you know, you submit the manuscript and you go through some edits, and then, and I often wonder, you've sat with these ideas. You said it was like an anthology of teachings and life. If you could add one more chapter, the publisher came back to you and be like, hey, there's like, is there anything else? One more, like, just because you've been able to like sit in it and live it out. Is there some, or maybe double click on this idea that you were like, oh, this is more important than I think. Or if you read this book, please don't rush through this part. Is there something there for you?
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's a wonderful question, Steve. Yeah, I think if I were to add something, it would be a much more spacious invitation to sit in quiet. I mean, that invitation is woven throughout the book for sure.
Yeah.
But I think I would probably add probably an entire chapter, maybe even an entire section. And I'm like showing my hand a little bit here, because I think that's probably where my next writing project is going. Wow. And I'll just, you know, you and I are dear friends. So it's stuff we talk about offline all the time anyway. So I'm happy to talk about it here. I mentioned it briefly earlier, but the ancient Ignatian practice of the examen has really changed my life.
Yeah,
I think that's probably where I'm headed in terms of the next thing I write. But I think if I could add something, I'd probably add a chapter on that as a primer.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing, you know, here's another thing I might change. Publishers would not go for it, but I think I might change the title to like, listen, 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 speak. I'm realizing there's so much more joy and so much more peace, and a life really worth living is primarily a life of listening. This is all God's grace, because I'm like, I struggle with all the same stuff most of us do, insecurity and pride and shame and ego and all those things. But I'm so grateful, because I think God, by his Spirit, is slowly over time disentangling me from my desire to hear my own voice, to like enjoy listening to myself talk. I'm just becoming like less and less enchanted and enamored with the sound of my own voice, and becoming more and more. It's like so ironic. I'm saying this as I'm talking on a podcast, you know, but truly I'm becoming more and more enthralled with long stretches of quiet listening for the voice of God. And I don't know, man, I don't know if that's because I'm just getting older, you know, or what, but I would probably add something like that.
It's so beautiful. Jay, I have two questions off of that. First one is, how much does your cultural upbringing play into, in a healthy way, towards your ability to sit in the silence? And how did that make it more difficult? You know, I think in some senses, you know, majority culture for me was kind of, you know, you're a leader, go lead in a room. And I think like, the discipline to actually be, you're not the smartest guy in the room, which, you know, but like you've always been like pushed to the front. And then having to be like, no, like, how do I sit and listen? And how do I discern this is a time for me to really actually allow my soul to heart, mind, body to be the fullest expression of who God made me to be. And this is a time where my insecurity is playing out. Talk about that for you, because I'm just curious from your kind of upbringing, the pros behind that and the difficulties.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, being a Korean American, you know, growing up, you know, as a sort of third space kid, you know, trying to navigate the immigrant experience and my own sort of desperate desire to be American, you know, all those sorts of things. Interesting experience that I think a lot of children of immigrants can relate to on some level. You know, Eastern cultures as a whole and Korean culture specifically, one of the benefits for me, I think, in navigating noise in my own life today is, you know, etiquette is a big deal, right? It's an honor shame culture. And so to be big and loud and boisterous is actually sort of a faux pas, at least with older generations. You know, I think in Korea, it's becoming very westernized. So things are changing quite a bit. And, because of that, I think one of the benefits for me has been that I'm very comfortable waiting my turn, you know, very comfortable waiting my turn, very comfortable sort of being tempered and measured in when and how I speak. One of the ways that it's been challenging, though, is in an honor shame culture, typically hierarchy is a very big deal. So if you are the leader or seen as the leader of a particular, you know, organization or a room you happen to be in or whatever, then you are expected, there is no gray. You are expected to know, you know, exactly in great detail with precision and skill, sort of what to say, when to say it, how to say it, where we're headed, how we're going to get there, all those sorts of things. So that's a challenge, you know, that's like in my DNA, especially in my role now here in my local church, you know, which is my primary sort of ministry responsibility, this church that I love. Yeah, I have to wrestle with that all the time. I don't have a problem being in a room and like measuring my words. That's not hard for me. I think naturally just my personality too. I'm fairly cerebral, so I like to listen and sort of intake what is happening in the room and process. But once that process has happened, I do, even today, you know, to this day, I feel this innate pressure. Like when I speak, these words cannot be gray. Like I've got to be very clear and I've got to, you know, sort of present myself as having the answer and no, or a solution or whatever, or a vision, or, you know, all those things in church world that are such a big deal. So, but I'm also really grateful. I'm surrounded by dear friends who give me the sort of love and care and capacity to just be me and, you know, and be honest. And I think that's the sort of culture we have at this church. It's a culture that I inherited, you know, it's not one I created. I'm so grateful for that. So, yeah, but it's a question I've been thinking about a lot lately, just my own heritage and, you know, having grown up in a Korean American church, but having served in pastoral ministry and, you know, majority culture churches, you know, for the entirety of my local church ministry, it's an interesting dichotomy.
Yeah.
I think I'm still processing a lot of it.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for sharing that. And then the kind of flip side of that is sometimes I'll do this where I'll just say, this like play it out game, you know, it's one of the ways I always try and teach my kids, you know? So, this will be a dinner conversation, this podcast episode, with my kids, around listen, speak. Let's say you are in a conversation with, and it's just noisy around you. And you're talking to maybe a difficult person. And you want to speak, listen. You want to you want to play it out. What goes through your mind to get back in the right headspace and heart space? What do you do in real time to get back to listen, speak, to hear God, to be heard in a noisy world? And you write about this and it's so formation driven in this book. But I just, I always love just to wonder, man, how do you normally play it out? You know, is there a question you ask yourself? Is there some prop that you think of? Is there something that just brings you back to go, hey, listen, then speak?
Yeah. I'm like a big fan of Christopher Nolan movies, you yes, know, I mean, who isn't? If yes. you're not, then come on, get on board kind of thing. I remember watching this YouTube video, and it's old, but I don't know if folks have seen one of his early movies, Memento. I think it's what put him on the map.
Yeah, great movie.
And I don't want to give the movie away, but basically, as Nolan does in many of his movies, he messes with time, like the way he tells the story, right? So this doesn't give anything away, but Memento works where if you haven't seen the movie, the movie runs simultaneously forwards and backwards. Yep. So literally you jump scenes and the movie meets in the middle. You know, you like meet at this sort of juxtaposition point. And it's interesting. There's this is like, it's got millions of views on YouTube. You could find it right now if you wanted to. It's Christopher Nolan at a chalkboard. I don't know if you've seen this, Steve.
No, I haven't.
He's at a chalkboard and he draws how he thought about filming Memento. So, and then he says like most stories are linear. So like point A on one end, point Z on the other, it's a straight line. And the way you would film the story is you begin at point A and then the next scene is B, C, D, all the way until you get to the end of the story in Z. It's like the way we all think about stories.
Yep.
And then he erases it and he draws this sideways U, you know? And he says, here's, you know, at the top point is like, here's A. And then, right, it's a sideways U, if you can imagine that. So literally right beneath the A is Z. And he's like bent the story. And then he draws these vertical lines and he's like, these are all my scenes. So scene one is A, the beginning of the story, and Z, the end of the story. Scene two is the second scene in the story, B, but it's also Y. Very close to the, and that's how he filmed Memento, which makes all the sense in the world. And I share that only to say, for me, and I've been in those environments where everything in me wants to speak before I listen. In those moments, I allow, and this has become easier and easier for me actually over the years, not credit to me, it's just, I say it as an encouragement. I think when we practice this, it becomes easier and easier.
It's good.
I allow curiosity to lead the way. And I remind myself that the story I am hearing is a bent sideways U. Like what I'm not getting right now is the whole story. I'm getting the mishmash of like point A in their story and glimpses of point Z. And I need to go on the journey of discovering like, what's the next scene and the scene after that. And this is, Steve, you know, like I quote you in this book and this is work you've done and have taught me actually through your work as well. You know, your last book, The Thing Beneath the Thing, which is like such a helpful tool for me. And I know that The Thing Beneath the Thing was primarily sort of an introspective look at the thing beneath the thing in me, but that's all of us. It's a human reality.
Yeah.
And so to allow curiosity to lead the way and to know like there is a thing beneath this thing I'm getting from this person right now. And like a Nolan movie, I'm not going to uncover that in the next 10 minutes, but man, like a Nolan movie,
yeah.
I'm ready and willing to go on the ride. I want to go on that journey. And curiosity will lead the way. And it changes everything. Even if the person is just like screaming their head off and this and that, often I will find myself, like this is a story I tell in the book. There was an older man who had a meeting with me, and long story short, he was so angry at a decision I had made. At one point he tells me, he's like, man, I could get up and just punch you right now, like physical harm, you know? And God's grace In that moment, I had this weird vision. I don't even really mention this in the book, but I had this weird vision in my head. The moment he said that, I remember, again, the Spirit of God, I think, not me. Immediately, I saw him as a little kid. Like, you know, he was much older than me, like in his 60s. But right when he said, "Man, I can get up and punch you right now," immediately I saw him and I thought, like, he was 5 years old at one point, like my son is right now. And I wonder what his story was back then. Like, I wonder what traumas he experienced that he holds in his body now. I wonder, like, who hurt him and who harmed him. Because I know someone did, because they did to me too. And you know, as great of a life as my son has, there's stuff in him that's going to bubble up to the surface when he's an adult. And it was just like, it was all curiosity for me, yeah. You know, which allowed me to take it in stride. It's like, man, there's a reason why he wants to hit me right now. And some of it is because he disagrees with my decision, but it's way more than that.
Right.
And I want to go on that journey. I want to learn more. So that's been a profoundly helpful gift to me.
That's so rich, man, because I honestly, like, I reading it, it reminded me of something a spiritual director had taught me decades ago. And there's seasons where I implemented it and seasons where I struggled too. But, and you just kind of like just talked this out, where they would say to have one foot in the conversation and then almost one foot outside of it, where you were like observing you, how you were responding, observing them. But you're in one ear to heaven, one ear to them. But like, you're just like, and I just felt like in the way that you talked about listening, it was like you are, it had that, the need for humility and curiosity. And when you have humility and you have curiosity, it gives you, again, with the Spirit's guidance, the Lord's goodness, it gives you the best chance at discernment. And I just kept coming back to this going, gosh, if I really am honest, I think one of the biggest pains of our day is we haven't trained people how to discern. And this book, it's like subversively teaching people how to understand what discernment is all about, just in the hearing God, to discern through, to like, it just, I was like, man, this, there's just so much richness here. And so Jay, I'm telling you, I'm so excited. Friends, please get this book. You're going to read it and you're going to be like, I know what I'm preaching on in July. I know what I'm preaching on in August. It is a way to shape and form your people, especially going into the election, to get them like thinking about really good news and how they can actually hear from God. Which, can you imagine if you had a church filled with people who could hear from God, who were curious, and who somehow understood what discernment was, the kind of discernment that's needed for today. So, Jay, where can people find you?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Yeah, I have a website. It's just jkimthinks.com, and all the stuff I create is there. And the church where I serve is called Westgate. It's just westgatechurch.org. Anything we do that can be helpful to you is yours, and can email me and reach out. Happy to share anything that might be helpful.
Seriously, he's fantastic, super accessible. Hey, you just launched a brand new podcast. Talk about that.
Yeah, totally. Thanks for asking. Yeah, my friends at InterVarsity Press and I launched a podcast. You know, it's coming back over and over again. It's called The Digital Examine, and it's just conversations with different leaders and writers about that, creating the space to examine our lives with God. And it's been a lot of fun. So, yeah.
Dude, Jay, you're one of my favorites. Thank you so much for joining us on the Crafting Character podcast. Friends, please do yourself a favor. Get Listen, Speak. You can pre-order it right now. Go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstores. It's everywhere. It drops 4/16/24. But I I kid you not. This would be an amazing, amazing sermon series. Thanks again to my friends at Preaching Today. They've got incredible illustrations, ways to take care of your soul and help you in your preaching, as well as Food for Hungry, who's doing incredible work around the world. Much love, everyone. And until next time, grace and peace.